sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
President Obama 2.0. The fiscal cliff is coming ever so much closer, and gun stocks are on fire. All that and Juan Villegas going to talk about some hot Latin stocks. All this and much more on episode number 288 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. Andrew Horowitz here, and it is now already post-election. It is the middle of November, or we're close enough to the middle of November 2012, and we had a quite the fun event, huh? We had the election. That was the first major hurdle in the hurdle of hurdles that are now headwinds that are facing the economic climate of the world. Of course, we know of all the other things that are happening around the world. But the election in the U.S. was something that, of course, we had been waiting for some time. The outcome was, well, it seemed that it was tight, according to the media. But in the end, President Obama took it and won, and we saw what happened as a response from the stock market. Not that they don't like President Obama. No, that's not it. It's just some of the policies, some of the things that he is going to be bringing to the table, some of the things that he has pledged, such as taxing the wealthy and making sure that under all circumstances, that any bill that is brought to him from Congress that has no increase in tax for the higher earners or a, for that matter, a tax on the middle class, he will veto it. He's not going to let it pass. And what we have now is the potential, if you think about it for 1 second, for a little bit big problem for the stock markets. Because I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Not that the stock markets will rebel because they don't like the president and the policies. That's possible. But what's really going to happen is very simple. It's a matter of math. Let's say that here we are, and we're in November of 2012. And we know that the fiscal cliff, it's a time when we're going to see the rollbacks of all the tax benefits that were afforded to us under President Bush and that carried forward that were automatically scheduled to end and lapse on January 1st, 2013. All of a sudden, that changes. And we have the higher earnings individuals being taxed and, of course, again, as opposed to being extended. Now, think about this. Many people who have money in the stock market have had very nice gains in certain stocks over the last number of years. Let's take Apple as a great example. You may say to yourself, why is Apple selling off? Is it competition? Well, maybe. Is it disappointment over the iPhone 5? Possibly. Is it the pricing structure of the iPad mini? Again, we can go down the list of all the things that possibly were an issue. But maybe, just maybe, investors who have been with Apple for a very long time has said, you know what? The potential is that my taxes are going up next year. In about a month and a half, if I sell this stock, possibly I'm going to be hit with a long-term capital gains tax of anywhere, I don't know, 30, 40% versus the 20% that we're seeing now for long-term capital gain. So you know what? I can save myself 20% potentially, if I save it, if I sell it now. And that may add up to, that quite possibly could add up to a lot of money. Think about the ramifications on the stock market if people who have extraordinary gains from stocks they're holding for a very long time start selling those into the end of the year because they want to make sure that they get in under the cut. And then what they'll do is they'll sit on the sidelines for a little while, make sure the wash sale rules are gone, and then buy it back possibly, let's just say, the end of January, just as a time period. So it doesn't necessarily cause too much of a question as to why there is high potential for stocks to be being sold off these days, does it? Does it really rattle anybody's psyche to wonder, hey, why are stocks selling off when President Obama was reelected? When, you know, we had this great stock market rally over the last few years that he's been in office and we've had a Fed that has the pedal to the metal and all that, because he is being very, very, I guess, the, you know, just stubborn about the fact that he wants to create revenue, and the revenue that he wants to create is from the highest earners in the country. Now, I'm not arguing whether that's good or bad. I'm not arguing whether or not the fact is that, you know, this whole thing is a giant garbage heap of a mess that they've put upon us. Anytime that they try to do a postponement of something into the future only means we're going to have pain then and we can deal with it now. And oftentimes what that means is the pain is going to be a lot worse because the planning is really just don't want to deal with it right now. It's kind of like, you know I have this test in 2 weeks and I got to study for it and I'm not going to do it tonight. And you do that a few times. And by the time you're ready, you got to cram into a study session over a 20-hour period and it's painful versus learning it over a period of time and taking the pain over a period of time. And that's what we're doing now. They waited till the election. They waited till this. They waited, and they didn't do anything about it. They waited till the absolute last minute, the 12th hour, and it's possibly even going to be, you know, 11:59 again, just like we had with the debt ceiling. Thank you. The debt ceiling. For all of you out there that thought debt ceiling as I said that, I think it came in magically into my head as you said. Thank you so much for transporting that information. But seriously, you know, they wait till the last hour and it causes all sorts of uncertainty, all sorts of problems. Right now, we don't know what the tax is going to be like for next year. Small businesses can't plan anything. Individuals are sitting there going, what the heck do I do now? And, you know, you're really setting things up very, very to be very, very troubling for the end of the year. That's why not only the U.S. markets are selling off, but the rest of the world is saying, oh, crap, this stinks. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know where to go. We don't know what to do. Because, of course, we know that the U.S. economy is one of the major powerhouses and the engines that drives the world economy otherwise. So even as we saw over the weekend, the China numbers on retail sales come out better, their exports come out better. You know, you see that, you know, who knows what's going to happen moving forward here. We still have a lot of the problems in Europe. We're not going to go through all that. But the fact is that now we have another mess on our hands. We have Boehner coming out with a ridiculous comment last week. The discussion of, oh, yeah, you know, we want to raise revenue but not taxes. Now, what the heck does that mean? I mean, I'm paraphrasing here. But how can you raise revenue without raising taxes? Of course, I would like to magically work and make my money but sit at home the whole time. But that's just stupid. You have to have one and the other. You can't just kind of try to get one side of the equation because, you know what, not taxing the middle class. Okay, is that fair? I don't know. It doesn't seem fair to me to make one group pay over the other group. Of course, if they make more money, it should be scalable higher, of course. But at the same time, you know, it's a disproportionate amount of people that are getting government assistance right now. And then you're going to pull, again, the whole thing is just, it's setting up a very bad situation because you have incentive loss for people that want to be entrepreneurs. You have incentive loss from people that, you know, to go out to fund the economy. And yes, I do believe in the basics of trickle-down economics. And you could argue with me about that. And you could tell me that didn't work. But the fact is that, yes, big business does hire people. Small business that want to be entrepreneurs and build out there, they hire people. If you start taxing them higher and not giving them the breaks and all that right now in the time when we're seeing the economy already slowing down, it's absolute stupidity. And there you have it. So the stupidity leads to a stock market sell-off right after President Obama is elected. The futures fall overnight. They come back a little bit in the morning. And the next 3 days, the markets just can't get a break. Widespread and high volume selling by institutions and individuals who really don't know what the outlook is going to be. The VIX hops up pretty significantly last week. And amazingly, we see certain sectors getting just pummeled, like the coal after the Romney boost. That coal was going to be good, whether or not it was going to be, but it got that great boost. Some companies up 50, 60% since he mentioned the word coal in that debate. At the same time, probably a little bit more scary are the gun companies. Sturm Ruger, Smith & Wesson, absolutely flying. You know, so something like, I don't know, 12 or 15% gain since President Obama was reelected. Why? Because, well, maybe he's going to put some gun control laws in. Some people say, well, it's the bunker mentality that's going to come back. I don't know. But the fact is, fortunately, we own those. They did unbelievably well. It's disturbing. The fact is, it's disturbing that those stocks did so well. Now, the coal plants are announcing that they're going to have big layoffs now. Now, all of a sudden, because there's, you know, the clean energy issue and the coal is being targeted, there's going to be a lot of layoffs in the coal area, and we're seeing certain businesses come to the fore and say that, you know what, with the current structure of what's happening with healthcare and the amount that we have to pay and the mandates that we see, the uncertainty about that, we're seeing layoffs that are starting to increase. Now, last week, we saw initial claims, of course, come down a bit. As a matter of fact, they were much better than expected. But the fact is that was a bit misleading. The reason why is that many people couldn't go and do a claim in the Northeast, number one, because they couldn't get there. Number two, the fact is a lot more people are not able to work, so you're going to see probably a higher boost. Next week is the number that you're going to see another irregularity, probably a lot of the numbers that weren't reported last week brought into this week, and more people probably put on because of the storm. But we'll see the following week get straightened out a little bit. We did see some better economics in the U.S. Amazingly, the consumer sentiment index that we saw on Friday from University of Michigan was much better than was, we've seen the trend is better, I should say. It was a little bit shy of expectations, but it was much better. At the same time, we're still seeing that retail companies and we're seeing that companies overall are guiding lower. So you have this combination of the fiscal cliff and the inability for Congress and the government to do anything about it. You're seeing a slowdown around the world. You're seeing the continuation of the, the degrading of the European market. Just Germany fell apart last week. Japan, we just saw some horrible numbers on exports and just terrible growth numbers last week. Again, China miraculously came in with some decent numbers. But at the same time, you're seeing that the U.S. is kind of holding in there, but corporate America is not. In fact, we did a study. We looked at, I think I told you about this, the EPS to sales growth, and it's looking really poor. Analysts are going to have to start bringing down their EPS, you know, estimates or bringing up sales, and I don't think they're going to be bringing up sales anytime soon. But we are seeing, the facts are that there is a distribution mode going on right now, so you need to be very careful. Now, a lot of people say, well, are we oversold? Are we overbought? You know what? Everybody's trying to chime in on this. I will tell you this, that we use a variety of different indicators to come up with an overbought versus an oversold, if you can even do something like that, concept of where the markets are. Because, you know, you don't want to be necessarily in this whippy market on the wrong side of the market entirely. In other words, you can be a little hedged out. You can be long with a hedge. You can be short with a little bit of hedge. You know, kind of if you have certain stocks, maybe those are core stocks and you want to add an ETF or an option to offset some of the volatility, you want to add the VIX, whatever it is. You want to add some bonds. Right now, out of six, right? So we go from a negative six to zero, zero to a positive six, something we call the key reversal indicator that we built. And that is showing us a negative three. Negative six would be highly oversold, something you don't see very often. And a positive six would be terribly overheated. Now, we're not seeing what would necessarily be called a horrific oversold situation, that stocks are so darn cheap from any metric that you just have to buy them no matter what. And don't forget something. One of the things that I think the pundits mislead you about with this whole concept of oversold versus overbought, when you look at things like, let's call it an RSI, possibly a MACD, or any other oscillating indicator that you look at, is they can stay either overbought or oversold for a very long period of time. The real trick is to find the inflection point when they start either turning up or they get so much off course to a point that they're not leveling off, that they're taking a big whack either up or down, showing incredible amount of exhaustion on the upside, or, you know, people just throwing it in their hands and saying, you know, they capitulate, I'm done, I can't do this anymore, and selling out. Those are the key times to try to get in, if there is such a thing. So what we did was we built this so that we would have a measure of how much we see the various indicators showing us where that whole momentum is going. And it's been slowly ticking over to the oversold side. If we get to about a negative four, negative five, that's something you want to start paying attention to, which could happen in about 2 or 3 days for a quick pop and relief rally, like they tried to do on Friday, and then a possible continuation of the trend. So the whole concept is that you'll have a contra rally in the direction that's opposite of what is happening for the trend. You could possibly look to find a way to hit that for a contra rally short term, maybe 2 or 3 days, maybe, and then go back and take it off and then follow the trend the rest of the way, either on an uptrend or a downtrend. And I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll try to communicate that on, if you follow me on Twitter, you notice I've been putting a few things about kind of levels on certain things, some charts up on Twitter. If you follow me on Twitter, at Andrew Horowitz, just Andrew Horowitz is the handle, we'll try to find where that does hit. And if we make any moves, we'll try to kind of give you a quick update of what's going on with that. But I will tell you that whatever happens on a contra trend move, again, whether it's a rally or a sell-off, you want to make sure to only hold that a few days and kind of, you know, be very careful on how much you hold that in the overnight sessions these days. So you kind of, you know, ramp it up and then kind of, you know, take profits a little bit and then ramp it up the next day and then ramp it up, then kind of sell it off 3 or 4 days. That's what we found to be the most effective, at least. Let's put it that way. Now, another thing that I wanted to bring up to you, you know, if you listen to last week's episode, you'll remember that we talked with L.A. Little. And if you remember something, what was interesting about that particular episode was that I taped the discussion with him on Thursday. And he said something, and I don't usually do that. I always talk to people on the weekends to get the freshest data, the fresh information that's available. But I happened to talk to him on a Thursday due to some planning issues. And he said something to the effect of, you know, if you were planning on and you believe this is a market to short, this is exactly what you want to see, what's happening with this contra rally that moved the markets up and then took them down after that. So, or maybe it was Wednesday. I don't remember what day it was that we talked. But anyway, it was very, very insightful of him. And I think it was really interesting that he came with that. And I think he was very much right with the app. I'd really encourage you to listen to that episode. Now, a couple of things that are coming up that I want to mention to you is you have, I'm putting up a post on the blog at thedisciplinedinvestor.com that's going to talk about, it's pretty interesting. We looked at the election from 2008 and the election from 2012, and we put a indicator exactly where the date was of the election, the next day the markets opened, and what happened post-election, and did the same thing for 2012. And I got to tell you something, it's not a pretty sight. Now, whether or not the markets follow the exact path of what happened in 2008, which was a pretty big swoon before finally we got that rally back in March, and that started the whole thing with a combination of Vikram Pandit from Citigroup that said things were better, the president coming out saying things were better, you know, the finality of some of the things that the Fed was coming in and doing, the president saying it's a good time to buy stocks because price, what did he say now? He said prices, and he said prices and earnings, I forgot, prices and earnings ratios, something like that, are really good now, or something. I thought was really funny the way he said it. Anyway, that started that whole rally. The question now is, and I want you to think about this, did the Fed blow it? Think about it. If the Fed says they're going to come out with $40 billion a month of buying of municipal debt or the or government debt or mortgage-backed securities or stocks for that matter, think about that. They just said that. They're going to do it for at least 2 years, at least. And then they come out and said, hey, you know what? We're going to now do it for 3 years or we're going to boost it to $50 billion. The problem is that the Fed now pretty much, you know, they didn't leave any powder dry. What they said was that they are going to do unlimited amount for as long as it takes or a limited time. They kind of pretty much threw the kitchen sink in this time, and you can't do, you know, double infinity. You can't go double unlimited. It's just not possible. So what they did was they pretty much let it all out there to try to reflate everything. And if that fails, what else can they do? Now, of course, they'll say there's a lot of tools in their arsenal and blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you have the monetary policy that we've always talked about that has been very, very powerful here by the Fed, by reducing rates down to zero, by throwing in as much money and printing as much money as they can, which is causing gold and silver to go up, commodities to go up generally, although some commodities came down recently pretty hard. And at the same time, inflation around the world, but there's a limit. And fiscal policy, which is what they do in Congress and with the laws and with the structure of taxes and the structure of spending, and it stinks. It's gone nowhere. And it's not going to go anywhere because it doesn't look like either of the sides are really willing to do much besides maybe postpone the discussion. And then what? We're going to be back into this period of, I don't know what to do, all over again in 6 months. So I want you to look at that. I also put up some information about the Mexican peso, which we'll probably talk to Juan about. But the Mexican peso, I looked at a really interesting story and I condensed it down to a few charts. The Mexican peso is one of the most favored currencies in Latin America over the next 6 months. In fact, there's projections on average that the peso will appreciate by about 5% over that period, which is pretty impressive for a currency. Now, we put that against the various currencies of other Latin America countries and compared it to the spot U.S., of course, to look at how much the anticipated change would be. And what's really interesting about that is that if you really think about what that means is, you're talking about the potential if you invest in Mexican stocks in local currency, you can get a 5% boost if that comes to fruition. You get a 5% boost in just currency valuation. Now, I don't think that 5% is going to be because of the dollar just moving lower, et cetera, but it's going to be a combination of things. And really an interesting place to look. Take a look at that chart. There's about three or four charts on that page. That's coming out tomorrow. You'll see it on Monday. Put most of the stuff out on Monday and Tuesday, et cetera. And then we're going to also put some things out about the gun companies that I think are really interesting to take a look at. So you could take a look at what's happening with those and maybe where there is going to be some buying interest and where you can actually get into that. So a couple things that I want you to take a look at. But the basic thing that you need to be aware of is that we have some more earnings coming out next week. We have Cisco, which is a big one coming out, plus a variety of retail coming out that we've already seen some. Did you see JCPenney's numbers, by the way? Man, that was just gnarly. There was nothing good to say about the JCPenney numbers. And this whole Ron Johnson thing, this whole, wow, he's coming from Apple, so blech. What a disaster. I got to tell you something. We talked about this being, one of those emperor's new clothes kind of thing where everybody's like, oh, Ron Johnson is so great. Everything's going to be great. He has done nothing in a very long period of time. I can give him 6 months. I can give him a year. It is a long time at this point to see this kind of sales drop and this kind of move against the stock, maybe 50% since he's been there. What is he waiting for? What are investors waiting for? What's the board waiting for? At this point, I think, thank you, sir. May we have another? Because he's really not pulling his weight. And I think that, whatever his design mode was, he's either gotten too drastic, whereas he's just made the stores inoperable and unshoppable, or his ideas are wrong. So either one is not making for a great story. Now, eventually the stock will level off, things will get a little better, and there'll be a buying opportunity potentially, okay? We say that. Just on the other hand, look at HP. Have you seen that stock lately? It's in the 13s. Groupon, by the way, has just been obliterated. But you know what? Some stocks will go to zero, of course. Now, a lot of people talking about Apple going to zero now. Ah, Apple's the next Groupon. That's just ridiculous. Obviously, they have 100 and plus billion dollars in cash. And if worst comes to worst, they shut down the whole operation. They pay off all sorts of bills and all that. They still have, what, $50 billion in cash? So what? This is a kind of ridiculous discussion. So just, kind of pay attention to what's important to pay attention to. And, kind of take the rest of the stuff as in stride and kind of move on. Because it's just, you're going to hear pundit discussions one way or another. Oh, it's great timing to get into Apple. Oh, it's great time to sell Apple. I called the bottom. Remember something. The dream of a lot of these pundits are to call the bottom, to call the top. And they do it almost every day, so what happens is they're always right. You know what I'm saying? The fact is, an investor, what you want to do is hop on a trend, if possible, and stay on that trend as long as you can. And then when the trend kind of turns, maybe either do one of two things. If the trend is light in the opposite direction, well, maybe add on to that at key points again as it's moving the other way and turns back into the trend you were playing, whether it's short or long. On the other hand, what you could do is take some of the money out and then get back in. Remember, I've told you this before. Never be too afraid to get back into a stock position in either direction that maybe you lost some money on. It's okay. Stock has no memory. You shouldn't have a memory for it, what it's doing and what it's done to you. It wasn't personal. It wasn't personal. Anyway, let's talk about GoToMeeting before we get to our guest. GoToMeeting, you got to love this stuff. GoToMeeting is one of the greatest inventions because you get to spend this time on this this square little box with a little window. And not only do you have a window that you could see what's going on the internet, but it's kind of a window of the world because you get to see your friends, you get to see your family, colleagues, people you work with, maybe potential people that you're working with, like clients or, you know, maybe potential clients. And all of it you could do with the HD Faces feature of GoToMeeting. What a great product by Citrix. And you could do it from your iPad, you could do it from your Mac, your PC, whatever you want to use it from. Basically, go to Meeting, and you can click on the Try It Free button. You get 30 days of free service from GoToMeeting. And very quickly put in the promo code PODCAST, and you'll get this, unlimited 30-day use of GoToMeeting. So you can check it out with absolutely no requirements to spend any money. Awesome stuff, and I think that's something you really enjoy checking out. So, anyway, we're going to get to our guest because I want to talk about Latin America stocks and talk about what's going on there. Really something that we haven't talked about very much. And so we're going to talk to that, and then we'll get back and kind of follow up with some things that you're going to want to know about maybe for next week or the following week and what you can do potentially to look at adding to position and making some money over the next couple of months with some of the things that are going on. So as I mentioned, I thought we'd do something a little bit different, and I told you about this at the top of the show. We're going to talk about Latin America. We don't spend a lot of time on that. We talk about Asia. We talk about Europe a lot, but I thought we'd spend some time with an expert on Latin America. His name is Juan Villegas, and he wrote the book actually called Ingresarios. I probably got that wrong, Juan, so you'll have to correct me. In Spanish, one of the top books on Latin America investing. Get on Amazon, all that. Hey, Juan, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Andrew. Nice to be here.
So you have this book out. So tell me a little bit about it because, a lot of people, a lot of us in the U.S., we've been through some pretty scary times with Latin America with devaluations of currencies, with leadership issues and all that. And I know that it's one of the most popping regions. You look at, from Mexico to Argentina and a few other, Colombia, many countries. So tell me a little bit about the book and tell me a little bit about why maybe I shouldn't be as nervous about, the Latin America landscape as we may have done from the past.
Okay, cool. Well, yes, the book, I wrote the book 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is also part of a social network. We try to create culture and not like here in the States, there's a lot of people who own stocks, who trade stocks, who, are into e-trading and are, this is pretty normal here in the U.S., but in Colombia, which is my country, and throughout Latin America, it's just starting to happen. So we need to create the culture of investing, of trading, and it's happening, and it's just a big opportunity. So we saw that as a way to tap into the minds of many college students, of retired people. So that was basically the idea with the book and the social network, because it's not only a book, it's a book plus a social network for investors and traders.
So what you're saying, I guess what you're saying is you created, your idea was to create a community, an investment community.
Exactly.
I got you. Okay. So I guess what's happening is you're doing some education through the book, through the things that you do. I know you do a lot of videos, you do daily videos and all sorts of on stocks, and you do a lot of technical analysis with charts. I've seen the work that you've done is great. But let's just kind of bridge back to my question about investing in Latin America. Is there certain areas that we kind of want to just, whether we're from the U.S. or for you, I don't care, where you're from, is there certain areas that, you want to kind of stay away from and certain areas that are really the places to be, or is it, everything's okay now? How do you look at this?
Well, I still see it as a big opportunity and like the next region that is going to grow, because there's a lot of people coming into, the income is increasing really rapidly in some areas in Colombia. For instance, if I give you this number, the year 2002, Colombia, the local index, the IGBC of the local stock exchange, was worth, it was near 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
8 years after that IGBC went all the way to 11,000. That's an 11,000% appreciation. So it's, the rally has come, a long way, but we still think that Colombia, Brazil, Peru, Chile, Mexico, they are all countries with a lot of potential in the coming years. So yes, it's been a huge rally in the past decade, but we still believe that we have 10 more years in Latin America. The region is growing, population growing. So I don't know. I'm a true believer of the best is yet to come for Latin America. Of course, you have to pick and choose some of the investments that you might want to consider. Is not every single sector is going to be interesting, but the whole region has a true potential in the coming years.
Well, one of the things that we've invested in before is, for example, there's a lot of ETFs out there that cover many of the areas. Some are a little bit thinner than others in trading. And we did, hey, listen to this, folks. Ready? Brazil. Did I do good?
Was that Brazil.
Good? Brazil. See, it sounds so sexy the way you say it. I got to tell you. But anyway, good thing we're not near each other, okay? I just want to tell you that, fella.
Okay.
In Brazil, there's there's an ETF, and one of the things about the Brazilian market, the Bovespa, is that a majority, or not a majority, I shouldn't say that, but a big chunk of the index itself is Petrobras, which is the which is the government-owned oil company. Kind of think of Exxon in a way, I guess, from all the things around oil, but they do a lot of exploration, deep sea in particular. And what's interesting is that the government has control over the pricing of that, and the government is able to take the profits off of that. So I've never really understood why it would be a good idea to be a shareholder of Petrobras. Am I missing something?
No, you're not. But Brazil is a very interesting economy. I mean, it's not only, of course, Petrobras. I mean, if you want to buy Petrobras, or you want to buy the index, the ETF, EWC, I mean, you can probably do much better looking for other sectors. Right now, Petrobras is in a downtrend on the weekly, the daily. So I don't see a lot of opportunities there. I mean, Petrobras is a very important company for the Brazilian market, yes. But there are many other sectors, I mean, that you should consider. I mean, not only, for instance, the retail sector in Brazil has a huge potential. Energy is also with a really nice potential in appreciation in the coming years. The financial sector. For instance, I was just talking to you before about how e-trading is evolving in throughout Latin America, mm-hmm. and Brazil is one of the big countries leading the way for trading and people starting trading from their own accounts using just a computer, just like opening accounts and start buying and selling. So the whole story of Brazil is, yes, of course, Petrobras has such presence in the index and all that, but the story goes somewhere else also.
Yeah, one of the stocks that we actually own, we own a couple of stocks. We've been in and out. And one of the stocks that I found very interesting is what they say is a Latin America eBay, Mercado Libre.
Yes.
And they actually are similar in that they have we'll call it like a PayPal style of payment, merchant payment process. They've been beaten down a little bit these days, with the consideration that, things are slowing down around the world. But I kind of, always wonder about if, in fact, things slow down. Don't people want to, maybe sell more things on, an eBay or on Mercado Libre or Mercado Libre, I guess it is. Market, what is it? Book market, right? Is that what it means?
Free market.
What's that?
Translation will be free market.
Free market, okay. And, I mean, is it, what other kind of names like that that maybe people don't really know about? There's the EC, right?
Ecopetrol, that's from Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
There's my experience more is more into the, for instance, in Colombia, you have Grupo Argos. They don't have an stock register on New York Stock Exchange. They will have it soon. Grupo Argos is a conglomerate with investments in the financial sector, cement, construction business, food business. So it's energy. So it's a big conglomerate group with investments throughout Latin America. That's a very interesting group. You can trade that through the GXG, Gulf X-ray Gulf. That's the ETF for the Colombian index. And there's a lot of opportunities there. There's also, of course, the Colombian industrial, the Bancolombia, which is CIB, Charlie India, Bravo, which is another stock. If you want to play the opportunity of a lot of people coming into, you know, having a credit card, buying a car and buying insurance. Only 30% of the people in Colombia have credit cards or a bank account. So the opportunity is huge. I mean, you know, how many people is going to need financial services in the coming years? So CIB is another way to play the upside and the growth of that industry in the coming years. So, you know, in retail sector, for instance, there is a big story happening right now. There's a company called Grupo Éxito. It's not listed, but in New York, but it's listed in Colombia. There's a big story, a big rumor that Walmart might be interested in buying them out. I mean, if they don't want to start, you know, from scratch, they want to buy a big company, and Grupo Éxito, which is owned by the French company Casino, they might be still. It has a pretty nice run in the past 5 years, 3 years, but that's it has a potential. Also, the retail sector has a huge potential. They are opening stores all over the country, and that's another company that I will consider in that play. The infrastructure also, Colombia has a lot of potential to build new roads. The country is pretty far behind many countries throughout Latin America as far as roads and transportation and all that. So a couple of companies there listed in the Colombian Stock Exchange, of course, with true potential. Cemento Argos is another company that I considered has upside in the coming years because of all the infrastructure that the country has to develop. In the government has 18 billion pesos, which is million of millions. Our billions are different from the U.S. Money waiting to be spent in infrastructure in the coming years. So those companies will benefit from that.
Interesting. Actually, just to let you know that the billions in the U.S. are different too. Now they're called something different now. Now we call them trillions. Okay. You know, that's just what happened over the last couple of years. We just changed the word from billions to trillions. So we're kind of right with you there. Okay. You know, it just happened overnight. So let's talk about, there's some places that we didn't talk about. Let's talk about, you know, Mexico, right? So Mexico, actually, I'm putting up a post on Monday that I did some research. The analysts that are looking at currencies right now in Latin America are saying that Mexico is actually going to be the biggest potential gainer over the next 3 to 6 months. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the comparison on a spot rate, it's somewhere about a 5% return, which is pretty big for a currency, obviously. A 5% return over the dollar. And that's not only from the dollar moving down, but it's actually from Mexico rising. And of course, Mexico gets a lot of their, you know, business, just like Canada, you know, a lot of business is focused on the U.S., of course. And of course, the difference, though, is that the U.S. also has the business, Mexico also has the business from Latin America, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they have been doing a tremendous job, not only what used to be a tourism industry, but they've really been trying to build their infrastructure and build their overall, you know, their economy from on an internal basis, and they've become very strong, which I think a lot of people haven't thought about. What's your thoughts on Mexico?
And it's a tremendous economy. We like it a lot. There's a vehicle to invest in Mexico is the EWW Eco Whiskey, the ETF for to trade Mexico. I will not buy, you know, right now, Mexico, probably by the end of the year, more near the $60 area, 61 for that ETF. I read very good news about, you know, manufacturing picking up in Mexico. You know, a lot of companies going to Mexico to take advantage, of course, of how close they are to the U.S. And, for instance, there's with Colombia and Peru and Chile, they're going to have like a new market. I mean, those four stock exchanges, they have the commitment to merge and to have operations between all those markets. So Mexico is very, very, very important for Latin America. of course, Brazil is the star of the region, but Mexico is really something you have to invest, not at these levels. For instance, the EWW, I just probably I'll wait for the 60, 61 area to buy again. But I agree with you, it has a tremendous potential. And like I told you before, with the integration, which is called the Mercado Integrado Latinoamericano de MILA, integration between Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Chile, you know, we're going to have a very, very powerful block of mm-hmm. economies that will probably in the near future, you know, Bovespa will buy them out. I mean, and it's going to be a big, big stock exchange.
Sure. Well, I mean, the efficiencies that happen with the exchange these days would be, you know, pretty interesting. And obviously, the ability for one exchange to manage this, especially the growing and the trading volume picks up, will obviously be good. By the way, I'm looking at a chart of EWW, the Mexican ETF, and clearly I do see that very significant and very important key level of support at about 61-ish. You know, you could kind of bend it either way. Currently trading about $64 per share. But what's interesting about that, too, by the way, for those of you in the U.S. that buy ETFs, you know, you also get a currency play on ETFs. You could have a flat day on the market, but if the dollar moves down, let's just say 1% against that currency, you'll technically make that in the currency translation because ETFs are not currency hedged and they're, you know, you're buying stocks in that country's, oftentimes, I should say, not every ETF, but you'll oftentimes get the value of the currency change as well. So if in fact these analysts are right and they're saying that there's going to be a 5% increase over the next 6 months in the Mexican currency, the peso, and then in fact you do see some kind of weakness here, it may offset it, but also if you do pick it up at the right price of support, somewhere around 61, you could really kind of get a double banger out of that. Get the currency benefit and the stock benefit.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty interesting, huh? So tell me about your community a little bit more. I want to know about that. So the community that you have, you do some education, right? And you use a variety of different technical tools. You know, like who's that right for? Who's the person that you could say, you know, if you would to mold the right person, the perfect person that would be, you know, looking for education in, you know, in your, you do all in Spanish, obviously, or most of them in Spanish, I should say, and you do a daily video and you do classes and you do some other kinds of education. Who's the right person for that?
Yeah, we wrote the book for, you know, the person who does not know anything about investments, about the markets, about how they function. And of course, it's a book about technical analysis, and we're pretty focused on that. So if you don't know anything, not at all, nada, cero, about the markets, this is the perfect book. But also, if you have, you know, you just wrote a couple of books or read a couple of books about investing and the stock markets and how to trade, this is also a very interesting book because we focused also here on what we call you know, tools, next generation tools, mm-hmm. the TAS tools that we use, mm-hmm. You know, because our relationship with TAS Professional and all that. And so market profile is the new thing for us. And so we teach a lot of market profile and we simplify the whole concept, you know, developed by Stettlemyer during the 80s. But this is pretty simple thing. So the book is for everyone, even if you're a novice player or if you're kind of you're still working on a trading desk and on a big bank and pension fund in Colombia. We have trained those guys also. So it's for everyone because, you know, our education model starts with a book. Then there goes to basic, level, intermediate, advanced, and then proprietary trading, which is like the PhD of trading that we have in the company, so is for everyone.
Interesting. I have one last question for you, and try to be objective with this. Who's going to win the World Cup next year?
Well, I think Brazil.
Brazil. The U.S. doesn't have a chance, huh?
Not so sure.
No? Sure. We don't have a chance. We'll play in football, though.
Okay.
I appreciate you spending some time and telling us a little bit. Again, something that we really haven't talked about before is the whole Latin America side. I'm not sure why we, you know, left it out, but hopefully there's no hard feelings down there. We'll get to you Iceland and Antarctica markets one of these days, too, if we haven't done that. But anyway, Juan Villegas from Ingresarios, I appreciate it. We'll put all of the links, of course, as we do, on the Disciplined Investor blog, on the podcast episode show notes so you can get to him and find out what's going on. And hello to everybody that's listening down in Latin America. I appreciate you listening. And Juan, thanks so much. We'll have you on again soon.
Thank you, Andrew.
All right, bye-bye. Adios.
Bye-bye.
Well, I try. I do my best. Anyway, we have some really great ideas there. I'll put the various symbols that we talked about on the episode as well on the site as well to take a look at. A couple of things that I wanted to mention. You know, one of the things that you want to do now in terms of this market, as we mentioned a little while ago, is as we're starting to fall into that zone of things are getting a little bit soft and maybe watch for a turnaround, is you want to start adding to the positions that are on key support levels. You want to look for those levels in however you do it, whether it's a trend line, whether it's just drawing a support from various times that they have fallen down. We do it a little bit differently. We add in a variety of calculations that include things like, for example, volume-based pricing. So we want to see where the buying and selling is going on and where it's not. And when we find those levels, however you go about doing it, is kind of at this point where you want to start tapping a little bit onto some of those positions if you own them already, okay? Now, here's the thing. Very small amounts, you start adding and kind of it comes down a little bit more. It's adding. Now, if you start falling through that and the market is still trending in the different direction, you stop for a second, reevaluate, and then what you do is you start paring back the position until it turns back around, if it turns back around, and it starts moving up. This way, you think about it for a second. You get the greatest leverage at a lower price, so you cost dollar cost average yourself into that position. And as it's coming in a little bit, you try to find that support point. And the best case scenario to buy that, the best and most profitable zone, technically would be what we call a bounce. When you bounce off that, in other words, so you come down to that point, maybe go through it a little bit, but then turn and come up, close above the key support level, and then hold that. If it holds that, what you're going to do is continue on having a additional level of support at the same level that you saw. Therefore, it makes it even stronger. Does that make sense? Now, if it falls through that and it comes way down, let's say, and you move out of the stock, etc., what you want to think about is that that particular point that was the support before will turn into resistance on the way up. And that's what we saw many times with the markets. And until you see the breakthrough and the solid breakthrough on solid volume that holds above and, you know, a bit above, a few percent above, on a couple of days basis, you know, you really don't want to act on that. You want to make sure you can see some solid footing and that the buyers are just there, not just the short coverers that are getting squeezed. And now, talking about the other side, when you see things in a down market, in a downtrending market that are moving higher until the market itself turns the other direction, and you see that you're finding a stock that's moving up and it's hitting key resistance, potentially look for that turn and then short down until you get back to that support. And theoretically, if you're in a market that's chopping around or a consolidating market, therefore you can kind of get some of that up and down movement. Now, we try to do that with trigger point research, and we've done pretty well with that. And those are the alerts that we have. And basically, you know, you get the two-week trial we've always talked about over at triggerpointresearch.com. And if you haven't gotten your trial yet, this is the time because a lot of bounce candidates are starting to come in. So what you want to do here is you want to kind of start adding the various charts, whether you print them and kind of draw your lines or you mark them at a certain level and alert them in some of whatever platform that you're using or alert system that you're using. And what you want to do is start building those levels to find out where the entry and exit points are for both short and long positions. In this kind of scenario, we see a market drop off 3.5% over the last week, and last week before that, it was kind of flat. Last month, it was down. You want to be very careful to, you know, look for those inflection points and be ready to act on those. And that's a whole different lesson in how do you actually place a trade. You know, do you do a limit? Do you do a sell stop? Do you sell stop limit? You know, how do you actually enter in? Do you do it over a period of, you know, different price increments? So you buy some at 47, some at 46.50, some at $46, 46 a quarter. On the way up, you start levering into it by pyramiding your position. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do this. But basically, what I want you to do is start making that list and getting those charts ready and those price points ready so that you can be ready to act. And do not fall in love with a stock. Remember my motto. We only love a stock as long as it loves us. Cue the music. No, but seriously, you know, you only want to be involved in a stock as long as you're profitable with it. Now, you can take some losses, of course, and you can do your thing, but you got to be careful and realize something, that stocks will move up and down. Futures will move up and down. Bonds, options. But you know what? Think of it like a mechanism to invest to make money. Solidly fundamental, of course. You want to have good quality companies, generally speaking. You know, you could have played the Kohl's, which are crap, and you would have made a lot of money in them. But generally speaking, you want good, solid fundamentals on the companies that you're dealing with. And then what you want to do is you want to look for those very important points of either breaking out, breaking down, or bounces. That's the only summary that I can make of them. That's really what the only three things you could possibly have. You could be breaking up through resistance, breaking down through support, or bouncing up from support, or bouncing down from resistance. Is there anything else? You know, unless the stock just keeps on moving higher, but then you're just breaking up through resistance on a regular basis, right? So you're breaking up still. The way to trade stocks is to kind of put that all in line. It's not as easy, that easy, but basically that's the concept from a trading standpoint, not investing now, trading standpoint. Investing is a whole different discussion. One of the things that was really interesting was that we have a screen. If you haven't done any of the quantitative work, and I talk about this in my book, The Disciplined Investor, how to create quantitative screens, how to create these filters that will filter certain stocks out and certain stocks in. Well, let's just say that we have a very, very rigid inclusion for stocks that will actually look for stocks that have certain characteristics on a fundamental basis, that trade at least this X number of shares per day in terms of volume on average, have a certain price at least above that. And then, so all these things go into play. Now, during the last couple of years, that list, out of all the stocks that are listed on the U.S. exchanges, all the primary stocks that are listed on the U.S. exchanges, we had a total of about, 50 or 60 at any given time. That's pretty healthy, you know, to pick from. Came down a little bit in 2011. When markets were kind of falling off and all that, but not terribly, still 45 names or so. You know what it is now? I think we have 15, maybe 20, maybe it's 20. 20 names on that list, which means margins are compressing and falling, which means that earnings growth is slowing and not keeping pace, and you're not seeing the year-over-year growth, which means that sales is slowing, which means possibly that we're seeing also that we're not keeping up with any volume on these stocks. I mean, so if you go down the 15 or so characteristics of what we're looking for on a growth and on a snapshot basis, it's amazing that only 20 or so stocks are now in that list from stocks from a couple of years ago, which were, you know, doing very well, about 60. Now, you know, and by the way, we're not just talking about growth on a year-over-year basis. I look at multiple years. So we have to look back over time to see the history. And they're starting to fall off the list, which is amazing. In other words, even if they didn't have that amazing growth in 2008, well, in 2009, 2010, they should have come off. But they're not. They're coming off now, which means that the growth rates have slowed dramatically recently over the last year or so. More so than we saw back in 2008, 2009. That's pretty interesting. Tells you one of two things. Either simply we got back up to the growth rate that we're going to be at, and we're going to kind of level off from here a little bit. Stock market prices are somewhere in the reasonable range because they're not, unless they start going the opposite way, right? And at the same time that, you know, we had that big ramp up and it's kind of, you know, a little bit over at this point. Now, I'm not suggesting the stock market's going to crash and all that, although, you know, never know, but fact is that right now we have a couple of good support levels, a few percent down from here on markets. Stocks will get wonky on us, of course. They'll go all over the place for no reason at many given times. Be patient with that. Look for those support points. By the way, one of the things you could do is find a very key support point, put in a limit order, maybe good till canceled, or if you want to watch during the day, and wait for a stock to come to you. It can come down in maybe one day, and then it pops back up. To a reason, not all the way back up, but just, you know, makes it back up. So you got to kind of, you stole the stock at a cheap price. Same thing with options. One of the things you want to do now is watch the VIX. VIX is 18 and a half or so and starting to approach those kind of levels that we get really concerned about when we're seeing that, you know, markets are worried about what the future volatility is going to be, and the range of the returns on a regular basis are going to start to get wider and more volatile. That's what kind of the VIX tells us in general. That's not the easiest thing to invest in a VIX option or VXX because it moves around sometimes for no reason. You see sometimes markets are down 1%, the VIX is flat. See, the markets are, you know, up one day, the VIX is up too. I mean, it's, sometimes it doesn't make any sense. Because think about it, it has a multiple day process. It has a multiple day outlook of what investors are looking at when they think about the VIX and why they buy the VIX for quote unquote insurance on their portfolio. And once they have a feeling that things are going to get a lot better, what they do is they pretty much just collapse it. You know, just throw in the towel, hey, forget it, I don't want this thing anymore until the next time I get really worried. And what happens is a lot of times that's when you see the VIX really popping down or popping up really hard when there's a lot of fear, a lot of concern, or just kind of just leaves the market and just deflates the whole idea. Now, last week I was kind of wondering, hey, wait a minute, why is the VIX not moving at all? And the market's down like, I don't know, 1% or so, 1.5%. I realized, and I think I tweeted this out, you know what? This market's not going to, the VIX market is not going to move until this market, the S&P, breaks 1,400 because everybody's seen the support there so many times, 1,399, 1,398, but the support has been there time and time again. And until we see that breakdown, the VIX, I don't think, is going to move. And sure enough, as soon as that breakdown happened, as soon as you saw it come in below that and really start running below the 13, we'll call it 95 number, sure enough, the VIX started coming up pretty significantly. And, you know, you really moved hard. So there was kind of no fear in the market idea when, you know, if you could see it bouncing on 1,400 or so around there, a little bit of noise around it. But as you saw that started to break down, that's when you had to realize, hey, you know what? Now traders are getting nervous. And that made all the sense in the world. Anyway, lots to talk about today. Anyway, here's a couple things I want to let you know. First of all, if you're looking for money management, hey, check it out over on the Disciplined Investor. We have a little icon there. Click it, see a 12 or 13 minute video, talks about how we manage money, what we do. We'll get you all sorts of information on that. $50,000 minimum for our strategy that does, we call the trading, TDIMG, managed growth strategy. $500,000 minimum for our global allocation strategies, which are much more, we'll call them traditionally managed in asset allocation manner with ETFs and institutional mutual funds that you probably can't get on your own because we have to block them up and, you know, utilize a lot of money to get into those. And then also we have Trigger Point Research, which has the alerts, and we do have, we're working on right now, working on the commodities, which are just come hand in hand with that, which are going to have futures and all that. If you're interested in that, just put a check mark somewhere that you're interested in and get on the list. We're also going to be looking at an ETF rotation model. Very, very cool. We've done some work on this, and it looks really good. It looks really, really good. And it's really easy because what we do is we email you and text you exactly what's going on and exactly what the model is suggesting to do. So if you want any of that information, go over to triggerpointresearch.com and you can get all the information that you want. Sign up for a free trial or just put your name down to add to the list. And you're good to go. Okay? Anyway, I want to thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for listening to all my kind of wackiness about the presidential election issue and how the markets are working. And hopefully you learned a little bit today. I hope so. Please do me a favor. Only a few days left to vote for the podcast awards. We have been nominated for a People's Choice Award, as well as Best in Business. And DH Unplugged has been in the general category, I guess it is. Please go over. Please just take a second. Just take a second and go over and vote for that and put a comment. Not just a rating, but a comment on iTunes. That's how we get the feedback, one of the places we get the feedback, and understand a lot more about what you think and a lot more about what you like, maybe what you don't like. But that's very important. So the buy-in, you know, to this is very inexpensive. You haven't spent a dime. And what I ask you to do is very simple. Just do a couple little things here and there for me. Go check out the podcast awards. Put that in. Go to iTunes. Do that. And we'll all be happy, happy. Anyway, thanks for joining me. This is Andrew Horowitz. Have a great and profitable week. And to all those veterans out there, I wish you all the best and thank you so much and salute you for all your great work for our country and your sacrifices from you and your family. awesome people. Thanks. See you soon. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.